material was performed under extreme mental duress and lack of prescribed medication.
You know, there's a lot more to comedy than what you hear on the stage.
I like the idea of comedy at night. Rule number one, attack the audience verbally.
You know, my friends laughed when I started doing comedy, and nobody's laughing now.
I emptied my case. They didn't boo me or anything. It's just every time I came out from behind the case, another 10 people had left. Man, I was ready to hang myself. I'm not kidding, man. I measured the light cord in the room and everything.
It's The Green Room, a program by comics with comics where we talk about everything. And it's starting right now. Hey, everybody, you have made it once again. It's The Green Room. I'm Phil Moshe. I really appreciate you listening. And those of you on iTunes, man, are you the coolest ever? It's going to be a great show this week. Got a guy coming up, one of the original Latin kings of comedy. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to The Green Room, Alex Raimundo. Joey Medina. See, I had to do that because when I introduced Alex Raimundo, I introduced him as you.
Okay.
So I'm not very original is the problem. Sorry. We're speaking to Joey at an undisclosed moving location somewhere in California.
Yes, I am. I'm actually headed to an editing session to edit a comedy special I just produced and directed called Cholo Comedy Slam.
Dude, I am so impressed by the amount of things that you have done. I was looking at doing a little bit of research on you, and you are really getting to be like you should be the original Latin king of horror films.
Thanks, man. You know, it's funny. It's just like for the last 15 years or so, I pretty much made a living doing comedy. You know, sometimes it's been a good living, sometimes it's been a horrible living, as you know, but. That's been my bread and butter. But the thing is, you know, my real passions are filmmaking and producing and directing, and I'm doing well with it, and I'm doing some good and big things. And, you know, it is a couple of bucks, but I'm still not known for that. And that's something that I really want to establish myself as.
Dude, you ought to be known for it.
Yeah, and I should, because the things I do are big. They're not, you know, there's some filmmakers out there that pump out a bunch of little projects, but you know, they're crappy. They're you know, they don't look good. The production value is bad. But the stuff I put out is you know, pretty big usually. And so I'm just hoping it catches on.
Well, I'm going to tell you something. I'm not a big horror film fan. In fact, I was looking on your MySpace page and I was seeing the pictures from zombie strippers.
Right.
And
right.
Dude, that was just creeping me out because I'm just not that kind of guy. But I mean, what a thrill for you to be able to work with both ends of the spectrum, Jenna Jameson and Robert Eglin.
Yeah, I mean, it was great. You know, when I heard, you know, it's funny, when I got the part for the movie, actually, I thought I was just an audition, but actually they had the part for me, and I basically wrote a lot of my parts. I don't have credit on the script, but it's you know, it's all my writing. And the directors and the producers really liked me, so I went on the project. But when they told me it was, you know, Freddy Krueger, I'm going to be working with Freddy Krueger, I'm like, dude, that's my hero, in a way. And you know, what was funny was when I went to the table read, he knew who I was already.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah, so, you know, I'm thinking, oh, my God, Freddy Krueger's a fan of mine. How lucky am I?
Dude, that's so flattering, isn't it? And I don't want to get past what you were talking about, your project, so I'm not going to lose track of your news thing. But I'm kind of on this other thing because you've also done some really good. You said you've been doing video film work in that. I watched that the video you did for The Weeknd.
Oh yeah, the music video The Weeknd.
Dude, that was a great video.
Thank you, man. I pushed the envelope for myself on that one because you know it was all green screen special effects, and I've never worked in my life.
Yeah, there he goes, folks. Hang on. We'll get him back on the line. Be right back with Joey Medina. Christmas is coming sooner than you think, and you know where you ought to have your Christmas party? Last Comedy Cafe. That's right. An easy way to show your employees how much you appreciate them. And listen, you can do it any way you want. If you decide that you want to just get tickets and have everybody go to a show, you can do that. Or if you want to really treat them, you can do it all. You can buy them dinner, drinks, show admission. Give them something they're not going to forget soon, something they're going to talk about for the next couple months. Have a little fun. Go to Laughs Comedy Cafe for your Christmas party. Just call them at 520-323-8669. Okay, so we lost you there a minute. You were talking about how Freddy Krueger knew you. Oh, and then we were talking about the weekend.
The video. Right, the music video.
The video. And you were talking about how you'd never done, like, green screen stuff.
Yeah, I've never done green screen. I've never done, you know, I've never done any green screen. We're recording, right?
Yes.
All right. Okay, good.
You can, by the way, we're not edited. You can say anything you fucking want to. There you go.
Okay, good. There you go. No, but you're going to edit it so I can start again about the weekend, right?
No, I do everything unedited because I'm lazy.
Oh, well.
So we're going to go.
Okay, folks, we're just going.
That's exactly right. This is.
Okay.
We do real stuff here.
This is the real shit. All right.
That's exactly right. Even if I make a mistake, it stays.
Okay, good. Well, you know, I like it. That's more real, realistic. So, all right, listen. So, basically, you know, I did this music video. I'd never done any green screen or special effects. And the reason I did it, believe it or not, it was going to be cheaper than the original version we had, which was basically, you know, a bunch of half-naked girls in a pool and all this.
Yeah.
So I own a lot of special effects and stuff that I don't know how to use personally myself, but I bought it because just in case one day I'll use it, you know, and so there you go. I put it to use, and we made the video for very, very inexpensive. The video looks like it costs about, you know, it looks like it costs about 80 grand, 50 grand, and it probably ended up costing 9 grand.
Well, I don't know about how much it looked like it cost or any of that other stuff, but it looked to me like something you could play on MTV, and it would rival anything that you would see there.
Thank you. Yeah, it's a... You know, I kind of modeled the T-Pain videos, which if anybody knows any of the T-Pain videos, it's all special effects and it's all this really cool stuff. And, you know, since then I've learned how to do special effects, obviously, and now I try to incorporate it in other things I do. And it's good as a director. It gives me more tools to use, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah. Well, now, did that get any kind of major airplay anywhere?
No, it did not so far, but it did win an internet contest for music videos. A bunch of people submitted music videos, and that video won, came in first. So that made me feel pretty good, because the videos that were submitted were actually pretty good too. They weren't bad.
Yeah.
And so, you know, to win, and you know, it was good. It was a Latino hip hop artist in a special effects situation, and that you don't see that. You know, that's something you really don't see out there.
No, I thought, I'm not going to lie to you. I'm an old white guy. I'm not big on hip hop music. I don't even get it, you know? I mean, right. I'm a drummer, so I can appreciate the rhythms and the music and that kind of stuff.
Right.
So I get that, and I liked it, but I was really impressed at how well it turned out for you. Because to me, no offense, it's not that I don't think you could do it. It's just that I don't think that I would know anybody that could do something that good.
Well, I appreciate that, man. Thank you. That's a great compliment. So, you know, and I'll even though they may not be listening, but there were a lot of people involved that, you know, I had a great producer with me, a co-producer on it, and I had a great editor and a great compositor, which is, you know, the special effects guy.
Yeah.
And they saw... And basically what any director needs is people to understand his vision and make that vision happen. And, you know, these guys all understood my vision. It wasn't like I was speaking to them and they thought I was speaking Chinese or something. You know, it was just like they understood what I wanted and what I was looking for, and they delivered it. It took a while to get that look that I wanted, but we made it happen. So I was very happy with that.
Well, cool. Let's talk about the current project that you are going to edit right now.
Okay, basically, I did about 3 years ago. I did a comedy special called Latin Palooza, where I host, and I brought up, you know, guys like Alex Raimundo, Willie Barcena, Baron Carter, and Mike Robles. And since then, I haven't done another comedy special, and I sold an idea called Cholo Comedy Slam, which is basically having a comedy special that kind of it, you know, niches the whole Cholo environment with lowriders. So I, you know, so I went on the search for comedians that fit the bill. Comedians who were balding, whether they were bald, whether it was chemo or just shaved heads. I'm like, okay, you're in. You know, and but you know, these are Latin guys that fit the thing, and you know, they fit the. They've got Emilio Rivera, who's a great actor, and he's also a comedian. A lot of people don't know that. He's in, he was in Next Day Air. He stars in the Sons of Anarchy. I've got Noel G, who's in Training Day. A bunch of these guys who.
Is he the dude that's head of the Mayans?
Who knows? I don't know.
Oh. See, I'm a fan of the show, so sorry.
Oh, okay. He may be. I never seen the show. Believe it or not.
Dude, you should be watching it. It's a great show.
I know.
It is.
Yeah, he has a great show. He's got the mustache. He's really, like, very intimidating. Even when he does comedy, he's like, you laugh because you're afraid he'll stab you. You know? And so the thing is, it turned out really well. Now I'm going to editing, and you know, that's where you fix up all the mistakes and all the sound situations, and you cut it so it looks pretty and the way you want to see it.
Right. And how is this going to be marketed, like to theaters, or is it going to be on TV?
No, it's definitely a DVD special already. I've got that locked in.
Uh-huh.
Then once we see how it looks, we'll see if it gets on TV or not.
Very nice, very nice. Now, is this going to have, like, a different kind of flavor to it than, like, your standard stand-up special?
Yeah, it's going to be very, you know, it's a little more urban, Latin urban, than most comedy specials, even Latino specials. It's because I wanted to get that vibe, you know, and there's music, there's, you know, I've got in-between comics. We've got guys like Kilo, who sings Lean Like a Cholo. We've got another guy named Mr. Capone, who's like a Latino Cholo rapper. We've got Frankie J, who the girls love. And we've got Kid Frost, who's like, you know, he's considered the godfather of Chicano rap. So,
nice.
So these guys are all intermixed with the comedy. And, you know, it's going to turn out really, really well.
Oh, excellent. Well, it sounds like something that I won't be watching, but I, and it's not going to be because it's just because I won't understand it.
I totally get it. And it is a niche, but that's how I sold it, you know?
No, I totally wish you the greatest success in the world. And I know you don't need my participation one way or the other, but
oh,
I mean, it's all fucking lost on me. I am so, vanilla white. It's really not good. It's a bad thing. But I want to go now. I really want to kind of go back to, you had a really interesting life before you started doing comedy. I mean, you were, I got to be careful how I talk to you, because you were a professional boxer, right?
Yeah, I'm like my own job fair, man. I've had every job in the world, and one of them was being a professional fighter. And right there in Arizona, in, you know, Tucson, Arizona, I lived, and I was the Arizona lightweight champion for a few years.
And how old were you when you were doing that? Were you like in your early 20s, or were you even
younger? I was 21 when I turned professional.
Uh-huh.
And I was professional for about 5-6 years. And so I was a lot younger and a lot thinner.
Well, you know, so you were just in a different division, is what you're trying to say back then.
There you go. You know, I used to be a lightweight, now I'm a heavyweight.
Well, there's nothing wrong with that, as long as you still got the moves. I mean, some people would even say Johnny Penny could still go out and take care of some business.
But you know what? Like, every time I think, man, I need to get in back in the gym, I need to lose weight, I just have sex with like a 20-year-old and I feel better. You know? Usually, there's nothing that makes you, you know, it's funny. People complain about the economy, you know, my car is going to get repossessed, I'm losing my house. Just get yourself a 19-year-old, because when you have one of those at the end of your penis, life is just a bunch of rainbows and happiness. You know what I'm saying?
I don't know. I'm so far. You know, again, old white guy, really.
Okay.
I'm going to have to live vicariously through you.
There's always Craigslist, brother.
Okay, well, I'll keep that in mind. Now, it's my, you know, the only other boxer, professional boxer I ever met is Johnny Penny. Do you know Johnny?
No.
Johnny is a comedian also.
Oh, wow, very cool. And he's currently a comedian?
Oh yeah, he's been headlining clubs since before the day I started. Some people call him the Cookie Man because he does a bit about why cookies are better than sex, which will tell you which division he's fighting in these days.
But
my experience with him was that guys that are boxers kind of they have a different mindset, the way they see things, and they're also willing to try some very odd things in order to train themselves. And I think that went through into his comedy, and I'm thinking it probably has something to do with the way you see the world as well. Like Johnny, the one of the things that struck me with him was he was telling me how whenever he gets athlete's foot, he pisses on his feet in the shower because one of his trainers told him to do that one day.
Yeah, you know what? I've heard that too. I don't know if it came from a movie or what, but you know, they've got pharmacies now. You don't need to pee on your feet. I do it by accident every once in a while, you know, because you always get that last drop that just falls on your foot in the morning when you take a piss.
I'm just saying, though, but doesn't that kind of willingness to go out there help you be a comic or a writer?
Yeah, no, honestly, boxing and comedy are a lot alike. The way I see it is this. In boxing, there's you against your opponent. In comedy, is basically you against the audience. There's a momentum the audience has. There's a vibe the audience has, you know. And as a comedian and a boxer, you need to be able to change momentum. You need to be able to you know, all of a sudden change gears and speed things up, slow things down. You know, in comedy, you've got your killer punchlines. You know, you've got jokes that kill, and when they don't kill, you're like, uh-oh. Let me try to figure this out. And boxing, the same thing. You know, if you got a great left hook in boxing, and you hit somebody with your left hook, and they don't budge, you're like, oh shit. Let me rethink this one, and let me try to fight. You know, let me do something a little different. It's the same thing in comedy.
Yeah, exactly. Well, every audience is different, just like every opponent is different, right?
Right, absolutely. And you fight them differently, you perform differently. Even though you're the same performer, but you have to know how to. You know, how to kind of just play it by ear just a little bit.
Absolutely. Now, did you, you weren't planning on being a comic, right? I mean,
no, not at all.
That was not something that you grew up wanting to do or anything like that?
Never. Only because I didn't think, might as well have thought I was going to be an astronaut. It was something that I admired, but never ever thought I would do. I love comedians, but I had the worst stage fright you could ever imagine. So I never in my wildest dreams ever thought I would do it, but I did fantasize about how it would feel to be a comedian.
Uh-huh.
Because I go, oh my God, that's amazing. They get on there, they get on this huge stage and they, you know, they make all these people laugh and they can, I'm like, it was just to me a fantasy. Wow, that must feel amazing. But I never, ever, ever thought in a million years I would ever do it myself.
And what kind of prompted you to get started? I mean, what was the catalyst, I guess, or what lit the match?
Well, when I lived in Tucson, the Laughs Comedy Club opened up, and that was in the heyday of comedy when comedy was in the 80s and comedy was hot, and I couldn't believe there was an actual comedy club. You know, I watched comedy on TV, but never in person. So I went there with a couple of friends from work, and I made sure they sat me in the back so nobody would make fun of me. And it was the first time I ever got to see real professional comedians live in person, and I fell in love with comedy even more. And I would go on all the free nights, you know what I mean? It was like, so I would always go on those free nights, and I would go and I would watch. Then, you know, after about four times going, I realized that there's an open mic, and it was almost like just like, you know, so when people want to skydive, they don't want to do it as a career, become a skydiver, but they just go, fuck it, I just want to jump out of a fucking plane just to say I did it once. So I kind of did that. And I was as frightened as jumping out of a plane, being on that stage for 3 minutes.
Sure.
And then one day, shortly after that, I literally hit rock bottom in my life. And I was practically living in a car, and I was completely broke. I was selling plasma to make money, you know, and I didn't know what I was going to do. And then I went to a comedy club I went back to Laughs just to cheer myself up, just to watch the comedy, because I got in free since they knew me already.
Yeah.
And then I remember thinking to myself, I have nothing to lose. I could literally start my whole life all over again. I have nothing. I have no family. I have no property. I have no nothing, literally. I don't even have a place to stay. So I said, I'm going to become a comedian. I'm just going to go for it. Fuck it. And I did it. And there we have it.
Wow, that's a great story starting out. I imagine you're battling the stage fright must have just been a tremendously difficult thing for you.
Yeah, it was very difficult. And occasionally I still get it. But, you know, you learn to control it, and that's, you know, and you learn to deal with it. And it's, you know, it's like in boxing when all of a sudden you get punched and you're thinking, oh, you know, and you're stunned. You've got to keep your composure and you got to shake it off and keep going.
Yeah. Well, and yeah, that's absolutely true. Listen, we're going to take a break here real quick, folks. We'll be right back with heavyweight boxer, comedian, Joey Medina. Appearing at Laughs Comedy Cafe December 3rd and 4th, right after this.
Are you looking for high-speed internet service? Are you looking for personal service? Try Colorado High-Speed Internet Services. Great people to deal with. They service over 15 states throughout the Southwest. They're a great company to deal with, very reliable, and the personal touch. Reach them through their website, www.cohsi.net, or you can contact them by phone, 719-404-3311.
All right, back with Joey Medina. Listen, when you started, who was the first guy you saw? Do you remember your first?
I think live, probably the first guy I saw was Pablo Francisco.
Really?
Yeah, and so I think Pablo was the first cat that actually I befriended and really inspired me to be a comic. And, you know, when, you know, we would talk about stuff. And Pablo, as everyone knows, is a sensation. He's just extremely funny. He's very original. And, you know, he's a huge success in Greenland. So,
really?
Yeah, Greenland? Believe it or not, he's like a millionaire now because of the internet and YouTube has made comedians' careers, they regenerated. There are comedians, I'm not going to mention names, but there's some comedians out there that literally were basically open micers or, you know, opening acts, and they had one great joke that hit the internet on YouTube, and now they're headlining improvs all over the country.
Wow. Well,
they're headlining with 20 minutes of material, but they're headlining, you know?
Well, that's to me the last comic standing phenomenon that created that.
That's what it is. You know, a club will book you just because you're going to put asses in those seats. They'll fill in the time with the other comics in front of you. You know, but it's just, and you know what? I can't hate on that because although I am a little jealous and envious, I'm not going to lie, but I can't hate on it because one day I hope I get something I don't deserve. You know what I mean?
Well,
I really do, and I'm not gonna give it back. So there.
So, all right. So you start doing open mics, right? And you go out on the road. And how long did it take you to get to where you were feeling really comfortable with what you were doing?
I was feeling comfortable maybe 3 years in. I think I started headlining about 3 years in.
Is that right? That's pretty fast.
Yeah, it was pretty fast, but that's only because I pushed myself, you know, I remember one of the things that helped me was when I was just an opening act and I wanted to become a middle act, I ended up booking a whole bunch of one-nighters across the country, and I just rented a good car, and I drove across the country doing these one-nighters for a couple of bucks here, a couple of bucks there, and they basically, you know, in those shows, it was just a two-man show. So I was the opener and the middle. So I was opening the show, but I was doing half an hour.
Yeah.
And during the times I was off or as I was passing through another city that had a comedy club, I would do a showcase.
Yeah.
And the majority of the time I got booked on that showcase.
Sure.
And then I got booked as a feature act. So then that's when I started becoming a feature act on the road. And, you know, the funny thing is, unfortunately, they're paying exactly what they're paying. You know, they're paying these guys exactly what they were paying them back then.
That's right.
The road, unfortunately, is not a way to make. I remember when I started doing comedy,
that features were making about $600 a month or $600 a week. And I remember telling myself, oh my God, I can live off that. $600 a week.
Yeah.
That's a salary. I can live with on that. You know, and but unfortunately, it's still $600 a week now for guys that I take on the road. You know, I'll take a feature act on the road sometimes, and I have to actually give them some of my money because they just didn't pay them enough.
I was gonna say $600 is actually a little high. I mean, there's I'm not gonna lie to you. It's actually ranging closer between, depending upon how many nights, 300 and 500.
That's sad, man. It's sad.
Well, you know, comedy's the only business that it seems like I've always compared it to baseball in a way, because when you're on the road and in the clubs, and I'm not taking anything away from them, you're kind of playing either single A, double A, or triple A ball, and depending upon what level of the tier you're at is where your pay is. I mean, if you're featuring in nothing but improvs and you're big name clubs around the country, you are making that maybe $600 to $700 a week as a middle. But if you're doing one nighter runs for Tribble up in the Northwest, you're making maybe about $400 a week.
Yeah, no, you're right. You're right. Absolutely.
So, but then when you make the jump to the big leagues, which is where you are, you may not feel like it, but from my perspective, you are. You're making better money.
Yeah, I mean, I'm lucky. I've made the most I've ever. I mean, I don't know. You know what? I'll say it only not to brag, because it's not a bragging thing, but it shows that you people could do this. The most I've ever made for one gig, and I've made it several times, not just once, but the most I've ever made for a gig, the highest pay I've ever received, was $10,000.
That's great.
And I remember one weekend I had two of those gigs. So I remember cashing, I remember having $20,000 of checks and cashing it on a Monday going, this is fucking great. I love it. But then I remember, you know, a few months right after that, I'm like borrowing money again to pay my rent. So it's, you know, whatever. It is what it is.
Dude, that's amazing that, you know, that you can command, that, you know, a guy can get to that point where they can command that kind of money. And it's there's guys that we never even, that you and I would know, that we could give their, names and nobody would know, that are making tons of money getting that kind of stuff for privates. I imagine, was it a public show or a private show you did?
No, they were public shows. There was, I think they were like mostly casino shows.
And that's even a bigger accomplishment, because the guys that are making that kind of money, that you don't know their name, so to speak, are the guys that are doing corporates, you know, and that kind of stuff.
Right.
So,
and you know, and you got to do what you got to do, man. And it's and you know, the thing is once you reach that level, the hard part is keeping it, and the hard part is keep continuing it.
Sure. Sure.
So you gotta keep reinventing yourself. You gotta do this. You gotta do that. You gotta, you know, do whatever you need to do to hustle to make stuff work.
Well, but you're a writer, and in the environment we got today, since you kind of do the film thing and you're a writer, I would say you're better equipped than most to keep up with the Facebooks and the YouTubes and the Twitters. I mean, do you find that pleasurable to do, or do you feel like you're grinding out a chore?
Sometimes it does feel like a chore. Like, sometimes I find myself with nothing to say and have to make something up. I remember one time I just put, hey, I'm going to get my first flying lesson. I was sitting at home doing nothing. But the last thing people want is, you know, when someone perceives you in a certain way, you've got to kind of follow that. You kind of have to keep feeding the fire. Otherwise, nobody wants to know, you know, nobody wants to know that Eva Longoria takes a shit. We don't want to imagine her sitting on a toilet taking a dump. We want to just think potpourri's coming out of her ass, because that's how we put people. We put people on a certain pedestal, and that's okay. That's not a bad thing. But I think it's a responsibility of the person in that thing to be humble, but at the same time live up to that perception, so you don't burst somebody's bubble.
Right.
You know, you don't want a little kid to sit on Santa's lap at the mall and go, Santa, I want a bike. And you don't want Santa to go, listen, kid, just so you know, there's no fucking Santa, but I'll see what I can do. You know, you don't want to do that, because you're going to pop the little kid's bubble. So it's the same illusion with someone when you have I call myself a quasi-celebrity. So when, you know, when you have that quasi-celebrityness or any kind of celebrityness and people perceive you that way, you still, you know, have to be humble and not act like a dick or have a big head, but you also have to say, oh, thank you, pretty, I appreciate it. And you gotta have to, you know, yes, take pictures and sign autographs and, you know, cause I don't even ask for autographs from people because I think it's ridiculous, but it's what they perceive. So I don't want them to feel bad. You know, if someone says, hey, I saw you in this and I never did that, whatever it was, I don't say, listen, you don't know what the fuck you're talking about. I say, all right, cool. Thank you. I appreciate it. Hope you enjoyed it.
Well, I will say this. I was looking up, I was looking at some of your images, and you can rock the Hollywood look, dude. I mean, you got the glasses and all the fancy stuff. They got you in front of all the runway stuff. You got it all.
And I hate that glasses look. I do Hollywood parties all the time. Thank God I get invited to them. And I see people with sunglasses indoors all the time, and I go, what a dick. What? Why is he wearing glasses? But, you know, I had my little phase where I'm like, all right, let me wear some glasses so people think I'm famous.
Well, but you look, dude, you look the part. I mean, I'm not kidding you. You look good. Now, I want to go back again real quick to one other thing was, can you tell me how you got started with the Latino Kings of Comedy? Can you tell me your story and how you got on that show?
Basically, I met Paul Rodriguez at Laughs Comedy Club. I remember I opened for him and I did six shows or seven shows and all I got paid was $50. But I knew it'll pay off later. And, you know, here I am opening up for a legend and someone who I personally admired and, you know, looked up to. And I'm actually sharing the same stage with him. I was on cloud nine and I would have done it for free, you know. Since then I met his manager who ended up becoming my manager. And I moved to L.A. and I just threw caution to the wind and said, fuck it, I'm gonna make this work, man. And so, I ended up working on tour with Paul Rodriguez, which, you know, I made at that time I made more money than I ever made as a comedian because, you know, I wasn't making that kind of money.
Yeah.
And, you know, I was making $1,500 a show with him. Sometimes we were doing, you know, four shows a weekend, you know, and I'm like, oh my God, this is like, you know, I thought I was like a millionaire.
Right.
And so, you know, I'm paying off all my bills. I'm doing all that. I'm having a great time. I'm touring. I'm living a good life. I'm riding in limos. And then I watched him. I watched how he was with people. I watched how he was on stage. And I really, really started picking up the professionalism that Paul has on stage and how there's a big difference between a superstar comedian and a headliner. You know, there's guys who are really funny, but then there are guys who could go on a huge stage with 1,000 people and command that stage. And that's what I wanted to learn. That's the kind of fighter I wanted to be when I was a boxer. So that's the kind of comedian I wanted to be when I became a comedian.
Yeah.
So then, you know, when the Kings of Comedy came on, you know, Paul was like, well, we should start doing the Latin Kings of Comedy. And then during that time, it was Paul, George, Carlos Mencia, and Alex Raimundo and myself were just the opening acts to warm up for the Kings of Comedy.
Uh-huh.
But then as the show progressed, they wanted to do an actual movie. For whatever reason, Carlos Mencia, you know, was out of the picture. And it was just Paul and George. And then, you know, they knew, well, we can't do this just us two. And so they said, all right. You know, they started looking at Alex and I to be Latin Kings of Comedy. So we kept on working harder and harder. And Alex and I, and we kept on, you know, doing what we needed to do. And before you know it, they asked us to be in the movie. And, you know, the rest is history.
Now, was that the first big thing you did, really?
The very first TV show I've ever done was BET Comic View.
Yeah, but I mean, the Latino Kings of Comedy was big, right?
Yeah, the Latin Kings of Comedy was huge because it was in a theater. It was actually in the movie theaters. And I remember watching that. I remember, you know, going to a movie theater and watching myself. I did it in Hollywood. I saw it in Sacramento, and I saw it in Albuquerque. I remember going to the theater, sitting way in the back, and people laughing at me, watching me. And that was fun. I've never done that before. I've never had people laughing at me while I was watching them laughing at me.
That must have been freaky.
It was. The first time was like, oh my God, I sunk in my chair. Like, I'm like, I was like embarrassed. Not embarrassed, but it was just like shy. Like, oh my God. Like, you know what I mean? It was just like, it was surreal, but it felt good. It was surreal, but it felt good.
Did you run out of the theater before it was over so nobody saw you?
No, because I was thinking in the back, so I left with everybody. But then, you know, people did recognize you, like, oh my God, that's you. And I'm like, yeah, it was pretty cool. It was very, very nice.
Man, that's such an honor to be with those guys. And now George Lopez has his show, Lopez yeah. Tonight. What do you think of that?
I think it's great. I think first of all, it's great that he's on. I think it's that he has his own show. For every success that any Latin entertainer has, it helps us. It helps people believe in us a little more and go, okay, maybe we'll give another one a shot. You know, I just hope he does well, and I hope he, gets better and better.
Well, and you hope he invites you on, right? I mean, that's the other.
I hope he invites me on. That may not happen, but but that would be nice.
Well, now this is kind of like talking about an old sitcom, huh? I know you're buddies with Alex Raimundo because he told me that when I talked to him. And I'm sure you're probably still friends with Paul Rodriguez, right?
Yeah. I actually worked with Paul in Vegas not too long ago.
So,
but it's funny. It's like we're friends, but yet we're not as close as we used to be, which is, you know, a little sad because I'm the kind of person I'm the kind of person I really truly tend to be the same person I am all the time. You know what I mean? I don't change. I'm not one of these people that have any kind of success and change. I'm the same dude that I've always been. You know, and matter of fact, I think with the more success a person has, the more humble they should be.
Uh-huh. Well, that's not. No, I agree. It's hard to. I mean, you got to have some sort of ego to get where you're at. But on the other hand, nobody likes to see somebody that's just blowing their own horn all the time. That's kind of crappy.
And I really don't. You know, when anything good happens to me, people go, "Hey, what are you doing?" I'm like, "Oh, I'm just, you know, working hard. Just doing my thing."
Yeah.
I just got the show. I just got a radio show. They put a billboard up on me. I mean, let other people say that.
Yeah, but
since we're keeping it real, I'm going to order something at Starbucks too.
Oh,
so you guys can listen to me.
Well, you can guys go ahead. Listen, I'm going to, while you're ordering your order, I'm going to take another quick break here.
And, you got it, buddy.
We'll be right back with Joey Medina right after this. Well, Thanksgiving is past. Have you thought about what you're doing for Christmas? I'm sure that's almost taken care of. What are you going to do for New Year's Eve? Well, how about comedy at Laughs Comedy Cafe? What a great time you'd have taking your spouse out, whether you're the guy that has to plan or the woman has to plan. Why go out with a bunch of drunk people when you can go to Laughs Comedy Cafe and just have a nice time? There's two different packages. You can go to the early show, which is just the show, and you can get home early, or you can go to the other parties you want to go to, or you can go to the late show, which includes dinner, and you also get to ring in the new year right there. It's a great time. Think of Laughs Comedy Cafe for your New Year's Eve plans. You can see about it on the website. It's www.laughstucson.com. Or if you want to just buy your tickets in advance, and it will sell out, 520-323-8669. All right, standing in the line at a Starbucks at some undisclosed location in California is Joey Medina, who will be at Laughs Comedy Cafe December 3rd and 4th. It's going to be a great show. Do you like coming back to do the special show at Laughs, kind of?
Yeah, I really do. It's funny because I performed at the casinos in Tucson and obviously made a lot more money. But working on the stage, working the stage that I first started, is you can't beat that.
And I
love it. It feels like I'm back home.
That's like a dream come true to like triumphantly land on your original stage, huh?
Yeah. You know what it is? It's kind of like, it feels like I went off to Hollywood. I did well, and I went back to my mom's house, and I went back to my old room, you know?
Yeah, there you go. And that's cool. And do you have a lot of guys that came that used to work with in the day back in Tucson? Are they still there? I mean, do you get to catch up with anybody?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I have friends, family, and stuff. And when I go, I like to go for a couple of, you know, a few extra days.
Do you?
Just in, enjoy the time with my friends and family and enjoy Tucson. You know, I lived there for so long. It literally is my second home. You know, I moved to Tucson when I was 19 years old. So, and now I'm a little older. So going back to Tucson is always fun for me.
Oh, excellent. And I'm going to we'll wrap it up here pretty quick so that you can get on with what you're doing. But I was looking online. I like to, first of all, you're the guy so far that has the longest IMDb entries of the guys I've talked with. So you're the big winner right now. But I had to laugh. You know how they get trivia at the top of the IMDb profile?
Right, right.
Do you know what your trivia is?
No, not at all. What is it?
This is your trivia. Is of Puerto Rican descent.
Oh, wow.
That you hide that very well, Joey.
Yeah, that's trivia. Nobody will know that.
Nobody could ever tell, you know, from talking to you or seeing you or listening to your show. I just thought it was funny that that's the only thing they could come up with. They might as well not have had trivia is all my point is.
Yeah, yeah, you're right.
and the Latin Kings of Comedy, I found this too, which I think you might find humorous. And this means no disrespect to you, but this shows how bad Wikipedia can be. I don't know if you're a fan. I kind of go in and out. But this is the quote about you in there. It says, they're talking about Cheech Marin. Marin begins with a light jokes. First of all, the writing's horrible. But Marin begins with a light jokes to later introduce the first big comedian of the night, Joey Medina. So on Wikipedia, you eclipsed Cheech Marin.
I like that. That's a good thing. I don't even think I have my own Wikipedia page.
I don't think you do either, because I'd have been reading that. But you do have your own Rotten Tomatoes profile.
Oh, wow. Is that good or bad?
You're a 0 out of 100.
That's not bad.
No, no one's rated you.
I'm not negative, so that's a good thing.
Well, no one has rated you, but you're by far the most famous comedian I've spoken to so far, because no one else has had a Rotten Tomatoes profile.
Well, you know what? I want everyone listening right now to please go on Rotten Tomatoes and please rate me. Even if it's a one. I just want to gradually move up.
You want to try? You know, sometimes it is a marathon. It's not a sprint.
Yes, there you go. That's what I've been told.
And the last thing is, I kind of find it interesting, and I always enjoy talking to guys who did it. You did morning radio for a while.
Yeah, I did morning radio in Tucson, believe it or not. And I also did morning radio in Los Angeles.
And how long has it been since you've been off the air? I mean,
about a year.
About a year. And do you enjoy sleeping in? Does that overshadow the loss of not being on the air every day?
I enjoy sleeping in, but I enjoy money a lot more. And I made so much money on the radio, and I really miss it.
Sure.
They paid me ridiculous amounts of money to wake up that early.
Well, and you're a guy with a lot of irons on the fire, and I don't mean to put you on the spot or anything, but I'm just curious. It seems to me like film and writing and that kind of stuff is really interesting to you, and you're being very successful at it. Do you ever see a day where you don't do stand-up comedy anymore?
Actually, no. When I was on radio, I didn't have to do stand-up comedy because I was paid very well. But I think once a comic, always a comic, and I'm always probably going to do stand-up no matter what.
So you never see giving it up. I mean, if somebody came up to you and said, look, we want you to be, I don't know, I don't know a great horror film guy, so I'm going to say Steven Spielberg's protege, and you're going to take over all of his stuff, but you can't do stand-up comedy anymore. What do you do?
At this point in my career, I may take that. Take it.
So that's a possibility then.
Yes.
All right. Well, listen, I appreciate you being on the show. For those of you listening, Joey's going to be at Laughs the 3rd and the 4th of December. That's a Friday and a Saturday. Make sure you get your tickets early, because I know Joey's very popular everywhere he goes, but especially in Tucson. So I'm imagining we're going to be having sold-out shows there. You can get your tickets online at www.laughstucson.com. If you're an old-fashioned type of person and you like to use the telephone and talk to people and that kind of stuff, you can call them at 520- 323-8669. So remember, By the way, thank you very much, Joe. I appreciate you doing this. It was kind of an inconvenience for you, and I appreciate you taking the time. And those of you listening, remember, I always tell you, do your comedy live. That's the way you're supposed to see it. If you can't make it to laughs, go to a comedy club near you. Thanks for listening.